Thank you for joining us tonight or this morning. You're listening to Coast AM. My name is Connie Willis, and you can catch me on my YouTube channel. It's called Blue Rock Talk. Blue Rock, right? Earth, the Blue Rock. Yeah, and we're talking. It's Earth's most interesting conversations, people, places, and things. We talk about cryptocurrencies, alternative health, as well as, and that's just a new show, and also medicinal marijuana coming up soon, aliens, remote viewing, Bigfoot, you know, all the same stuff, Bigfoot Fridays, all that really good stuff that you get here as well. So I hope that you'll join me. It's my YouTube channel, Blue Rock Talk with Connie Willis, and also featured on our website is, I guess I'd call it a documentary that I just did recently with Sasquatch Journey, a group that took me out to their hotspot in the Rockies. It's called Bigfoot in the Rockies. You can find it on our website as well, or you can just go to Blue Rock Talk and see it there. So I hope that you'll subscribe and become a Blue Rocker. That's someone in the know. Now, coming up, more with Jim Peniston on the Rendlesham incident, as well as Open Lines. Stay with us here. You're listening to Coast AM. With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite, we are Coast to Coast AM. Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis. We're talking with Jim Peniston of the Rendlesham Enigma, the new book that he's got coming out soon enough. And we got to the point of Jim's story where we're right at the regression. So is this something, Jim, that you were looking for? You were looking forward to, or you had no idea this would even be something that would happen to you one day?
Well, I never knew that was going to happen, though. I only went in there because of I wasn't sleeping, and it's a sleep disorder. And anyway, we did that first session, and she prepped me. She says I wasn't going to feel anything. I was going to be watching it, you know, like a movie and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And she says, you won't remember. I says, you won't remember. She says, I'll make sure that, you know, it's not remembered. I said, okay, sounds okay to me. And so, I came out of the 2 hours, I came out of it, and I mean, I am relaxed, I'm refreshed, I feel great. And I'm looking at her, and she has her mouth on the table. I said, what's wrong? And she said, we're going to need another session. She says, tell me about RAF Woodbridge. And I went, oh, my God, I hope I didn't say anything about that. She says, yes, you did. And she said, we need to, have another session. And I said, okay. So that was the trauma, apparently, that was keeping me from sleeping. At least that's what her evaluation was. And the nice part about this is that she was a wonderful person. She gave me, this is the days before you sued anybody, your therapist or your psychiatrist. and she gave me, the film. So I got her notes. And so everything's on film. And to date, I've never watched the regressions. I never watched them at all. Like, I can't. I tried, every time I was just too emotional. And, God bless my co-author, Gary, he meticulously went through and transcribed the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I owe him so much. And, we Skype all time, writing the book. He has took his time, and he read the transcript to me. So that's how I learned everything that was in the hypnosis.
Oh, my. Are they, will you ever let anyone else see those?
Well, it's covered under HIPAA. Two or three minutes have went, I think, in a documentary, and that was it. I think so. I think we will eventually release them.
Wow.
They corroborated everything, everything I was saying, I remembered, so, and more. so.
Oh, it's the and more that I want to know. You know, it's amazing that as soon as you told her, you know, you went under the regression, then you came back out, how you said, oh, I felt great. you finally got it out of your system. Isn't that amazing, just getting something out like that?
It is. And, like, right now, I'm dealing with triggers. And only recently, with help from really good friends, I've been able to handle these triggers face on, and rather than hide from them. So, and it's better for me. I feel better. So maybe not at the time, but over the course of the days after that happens, I feel better.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And now here you are, you know, going on like tours and talking to people about it, and standing in front of crowds.
Connie, the first book, when I wrote my portion, being a contributor on that, because really Nick Pope was the lead author, and I felt good. Before that, I'd be talking at a conference, and I get to certain points, and I just got too emotional, I couldn't even talk. And so after writing that first book, writing it down, it seemed to help me a lot. And I'll tell you right now, The Rendlesham Enigma, that has helped me immensely right now.
Oh, I bet. I bet. Very therapeutic for you.
Yes, it really works for me. And I'm quite pleased with it.
Well, going back to the account, because it's an account, not a story, I agree.
That's right.
I learned that from you, and you're right on with that.
I don't have a story. I have an accounting.
That's right. I like that. So you're part of it. Was that it for you? Because, you know, like I said, I've heard all these different stories along the way. You even said whatever you heard is really not what actually happened. I remember that then there was more activity with Charles, and didn't they even come back weeks later or something like that? I remember hearing some sort of letter was handed over to some general or something like that from little tiny 3-foot people or something. Where did all these stories come from?
Well,
what's real?
Well, they had a cover story. And the cover story, I mean, what happened with Colonel Hall and Sergeant Nevels on that night, they did see, lights in the sky.
So, and that was the same night, right? Same night.
Yeah. Okay. No, this is a couple days later, a day and morning later. And they did see that. But it worked out well for the whomever with the containment story. Because what they did is they melded them together, and they sort of eliminated the first night, and it worked quite well. That, you know, my contact night was just briefly talked about, and that worked. I mean, it fit in nice. And then they had the cover story. I go into a lot of detail in the book about the cover story and how it was implemented, and how people heard that, and some even wrote a book on it. You know, some people did that, but it was a cover story.
And what was the cover story? That it was what?
It's the stuff that came out in the News of the World newspaper in '83. In England, it's a national newspaper, and that came out there. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on it. I don't want to talk about any more misinformation.
True. But were they saying it was UFO, or were they saying it was something else?
Oh, it's bizarre. I mean, it's everything from floating entities to whatever.
That was the cover story? Holy cow.
Oh, yeah, it's just another UFO story, isn't it?
Oh. That's interesting.
Yeah. I go into complete detail. I'm gonna go back a little bit. I want the people, the public, to know that I wasn't left high and dry okay? The Air Force took care of me. Immediately after the incident, within, the, say, 10 months, Major Zickler, who was a squadron commander for security police there, and it was part of the person who is behind part of the implementation of the cover story, left. He got his assignment to Sandia Labs. And he was replaced by a colonel, which is odd. And that was Colonel Highbush, who I'll talk about. I do talk about in the book extensively. And I remember the first day he was working, I get a call. I have to go up to his office, and this is in the book in detail. And I'm, you know, the brief to the new squadron commander. I figured plans and programs. I was working there then. And so I grabbed, you know, the secret plan, this top secret plan. I'm taking them all up there, and I'm going to be all prepared to impress my squadron commander. And I get up there, and, of course, I reported to him and that, and he's like, what are you doing? And I says, I'm going to brief you on our plans, contingency plans and stuff. Oh, no. He says, we got plenty of time for that. And has the orderly room lieutenant. He says, you want any coffee? And I says, yeah, okay. And he says, a couple cups of coffee, and he brings it in. He says, sit down. He shuts the doors, and he says, I want you to know I just came from the Pentagon, my last assignment at the Air Staff, and I worked Security Police Intelligence. By the way, I checked on that. There's no such thing as Security Police Intelligence, by the way.
Hmm.
At least what I can find. And he tells me, he says, I read the report. I read your statement at Air Staff. He says, I'm here if you ever need me. I went, wow.
Huh.
I said, wow. And I'll tell you what, he kept in contact with me all of the rest of the time I was in the service, because I couldn't talk about it with anybody, except I did talk with him. And whether or not, you know, I was at another European base or not, I still got calls, or I still had him visit. He later became the chief of security police for Europe, the U.S. Air Force's Europe. And he came down and see me at Bitburg when I was stationed there. And, you know, we had dinner and stuff like that together. And he was very valuable to me. Matter of fact, Colonel Halt was too. I mean, Colonel Halt kept in contact with me at every base he was at, whether he was in Korea or whether he was in Oklahoma or whether he was at Forens, wherever he was at. We always talked.
He saw the same thing you saw.
Pardon me?
He saw the same thing you saw. Right?
I seen the what?
He saw the same thing you saw, correct?
No.
No.
No, I know. So, he's seen lights in the sky.
Oh, you don't? Okay. You don't think it was the same thing?
I don't know what to write. That's, you know, that's what I was told by him and by Sergeant Nevels. And I use those two as a good source, because those two individuals were the farthest out and actually have you know, the whole encounter of the third night is with them, and
everybody else
was back at the staging area, according to both of them. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm taking them for the word. Yeah, I'm taking them for the word on this, because one is neither of them have ever lied to me, so. And they're honest and stand-up people. So.
Well, I remember you talking about your account in the book, and it said something like you knew they were not gone yet or they were going to come back or something. So I'm just attributing it to that.
Yeah, there was an impression. And I'll tell you what I was told by Colonel Halt is, you know, that when they and Sergeant Nevels confirmed it. Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
We'll let you choke up that hairball there.
Yeah.
We're talking with James Peniston of the Rendlesham Enigma.
Yeah, so, you know, and I take them for the words and that. They said what appeared to even Monroe, and I just talked to him recently, last week, and again, we brought it back up, and it's the part about it appeared to be a number of craft of some type in the air, and they looked like they were doing a grid search, and the impression I had from the night of the contact was that it was not supposed to be there, or was in trouble or something like that. And it was supposed to be farther east or farther away, or I don't know. It was a really strange impression.
Do you feel that someone somewhere knows what these were?
Yes. I believe that. And it has to do with the what came out in the hypnosis, the transcripts, because they implemented the block. For some reason, they wanted to block the fact that it was even an OSI building, and then they wanted to block the whole thing about the binary. So, and I'll tell you what, my hypnosis regression I did, actually, she worked on it, and she broke that block, or at least...
Really?
Yeah, and...
Well, I guess she did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know back then that ones and zeros had to do with computer stuff? Did you know that back then?
Oh God, no.
Yeah,
My field's in criminal justice and industrial security, so I know.
I don't know if anybody did back then, right? I don't think anybody knew anything about computers.
Computers are rare.
Yeah.
I didn't know nothing about that.
Were you, I remember something along the way throughout the years where I remember just briefly remember at one point, and it was from you, or at least that's what I got along the way, that, so I can verify it right now, going to the horse's mouth here. Did you believe at one point they were actually time travelers, they were humans, they were time travelers, they were just coming back?
Well, that's a Hollywood term. Dimensional travel, yes. Sure, that's a dimensional travel type thing. Hmm. I actually had that impression, yeah.
Oh, well, hey, there's nothing wrong with that theory. What is your thought now? Is it still the same?
They're interdimensional travelers, for sure. That's what I believe. Do I have, can I prove it? No, I can't. Everything that the research on the binary, there's a code within a code, and that's going to be in a second book, because there's no way we could do one book with it. With the incident, because
it's going to be in like 8 years before we get that.
No, matter of fact, that's done.
It's, really? Oh,
it's pretty much done. And it's
excellent.
I think it'll be out like 4 or 5 months after this other book.
Excellent. And, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're at 4 years.
Okay, now that makes sense. Okay, well, I tell you, I mean, what I saw was great, so I'm looking forward to it. I really am.
There's stuff that you're going to go, wow. I mean, even more than that. I mean, the aftermath is incredible with it. We still had CIA involvement in meetings, within the last 3 years. I mean, so that's all in the book. And I was offered a great opportunity if I just would do an MRI and also do a blood testing and that with them, and I talk about that, and they even told me they give me full disability from the VA. Which I'm like, I can walk, talk, and I'm fine, and I'm not missing limbs, and I don't have traumatic head injuries, but they're going to give me full disability. You got to be kidding me. And
Holy cow. Boy, does that mean something. We're talking with Jim Peniston here on Coast to Coast AM, and we have more to come. Stay with us. Open lines, too. It's another very fascinating show here on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, everybody. Connie Willis here. We are talking with Jim Peniston of the Rendlesham Incident. His latest book coming out here soon is going to be called The Rendlesham Enigma. And then the second one is shortly after that. Jim, I got to ask you, if we can go back to that regression, did you learn things that you had no idea that happened? Was there any type of, I got to ask this, did you notice any missing time that was longer than you thought? And did you get, was there any type of abduction that you later found out?
Good question.
Thank you.
What happened was, after I got in from the field, from the, an investigation in CSC, I noticed my watch was 45 minutes off the time of the regular clocks, and so that has always bothered me. But I'm going to contribute it to the part when I put my hand on the triangular glyph. And maybe that wasn't 3 seconds. Maybe it wasn't 5 seconds. Maybe it wasn't 10 seconds. Maybe that took 45. I don't know.
Did she find out anything when she regressed you about that?
No, not from the, that I recall from the transcript. You know what? I don't know if from the transcript. It was unmanned, the craft. It was intelligent control, but the reason I'm calling it intelligent control is because when it took off, why would it make a right turn? You know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, those are things that from my observations and that, but.
And
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, what about, you just now said it was unmanned. What if they were tiny little itty bitty things? I mean, I just say, I got to throw it out there.
Well, I'm talking, there's definitely no way it could be piloted by, let's say, a human being. I mean,
right. Oh,
yeah, it just wasn't big enough. I mean,
I gotcha. Unhuman.
That's really interesting about that is because when they had the containment team coming out from Langley, a couple of days later, they sent a C-130 out, and they fenced off the area and all that kind of stuff. And they did tests. And one of the tests they did is the ground was frozen, because of, that time of year. And the impressions were like an inch and a half down in the ground. And they determined that this craft weighed somewhere around 7 tons. So,
wow.
Yeah. On the landing gear that didn't exist that I couldn't see. Yeah.
That was interesting too, by the way. So let's take a phone call here. Annie on the Wildline card, Alabama, has a question for you, Jim. Hi there, Annie. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
Hi, Annie. Yes, Annie is okay.
She is.
I was asking. Jim, so nice of you to come on the show. I would like to know about the story I've heard about the craft that flew over at Rendlesham and shined some kind of a light beam or a blue beam on a nuclear missile facility and disabled the nuclear missiles. Does that have anything to do with this incident you're talking about?
No.
What incident was that? Was that Bentwaters?
Well, no, I don't know anything about that. It's not contributed to Bentwaters that I know of. Even from what Sergeant Nevels and Colonel Hall told me, that's not the case.
Yeah. Thank you, Annie, for that. Calling Alabama. That's the thing with so many There's different documentaries out there. There's different things that you hear. But that was a whole nother incident that I remember she's talking about, where UFOs were seen over the missiles, and they were shut off, the nuclear missiles, and they were turned off.
Let me tell you about Sergeant Nevels. One of the things that he was upset about, he just told me this in the last couple months. I can't remember the documentary now. It was maybe a few years ago. And paranormal something. Okay. I can't remember the documentary. And Monroe was really upset because they edited it to make it sound like the beams of light were shooting down in the weapons storage area.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and when they edited it, that's how it sounded. That's what the film company wanted. And Monroe was like livid over it. He says, "That ain't what I said." No, they cut it out, and they put it the way they wanted to, you know, to present it to the public. That's the problems with documentaries. Every one I've done, the best part of them, I guarantee you, are on the cutting room, editing room floor.
Okay. Yes. Yes, it kills me.
They don't have their own agenda. They're out to make money. I mean, that's fine. You know, but if you're looking for 100% truth, you're not going to find it.
And the thing is, they don't need to fake it. They don't need to change it. It's already crazy enough.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to do that. They don't need to do that. It just drives me crazy, because not only do they do, you know, not only do they do it continuously, but they change. These people that really do want to learn about it, they get the wrong information just because somebody wants to, I don't know, make it different than it is in some way where they think it's better. But it's not. It's not better. It's already incredible as it is.
You know, the Rendlesham Forest incident is not about me. It's not about any other witness out there. What it's about, the binary code. That's what it's about. It always, I didn't know that at the beginning, but now we're at a point of our research. That is what it's about. And the discoveries that Gary has done are have shown a code within the code, and the math don't lie. I mean, we're going to stand behind it 150% and challenge anybody to debunk it.
So what's the code?
These are good. It's good research.
Can you tell us the code and the code within the code?
Oh, my. It's got to do with the seven coordinate sites how they will show different things around the world. And plus, one of the things that it does is it concentrates on the Giza pyramid, and it identifies two chambers that are right now unknown. And we do have a team that's actually doing research at this very moment as we speak on it. We're hoping that they get enough permissions from the government of Egypt to do some real thorough research with it. And we're sure that there's going to be a major find with it in the very near future.
A major find. What do you think that find might be?
Who knows? Who knows what's inside
those
chambers? I mean, maybe they're, it could be anything. But we think it's culminating to that. So
you got any of the remote viewers working on that? Any of the military guys?
No, none at all.
No? No?
No.
Set you up with some of them.
No, these are actually scientists, and they're,
they're just going in. They're going to go in and do the real thing.
Yeah, they're professors. They're on grants for other reasons, with the universities.
Excellent.
And we're looking for substantial information to come out. So, we're quite pleased with it.
Jim, that's great. Congratulations.
This the incident's not about me. It's not about anybody, any person. It's about something much bigger.
Excellent. Patty, wild card line number two out of Seattle. Hey there, Patty. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Do you have a question for Jim?
I sure do, and I want to give a shout-out to you, Connie. I heard your very first show. You were so giddy. I just got to know that show.
And thank you.
Jim, so happy to hear you on the show. I texted you and told you I was going to try and be a caller, and here I am. So
good job.
I want to tell you today that Jim saw my Red Orb UFO video, which I'm not a creator or anything. I just tried to get somebody to see it, and Jim managed to have a look at it. And it was only one of five clips, so I put them up on YouTube so anybody can look at them if they want to. But, yeah, Jim, I've followed you for probably, I don't know, 20-some years, and your story is absolutely fascinating. So, what I really wanted to know is, and especially since I had this recent sighting, how alone did you feel just suddenly joining a club of those who have experienced a UFO sighting, something so out of this world, and suddenly feeling separated from the whole rest of the population who has never seen anything, and to them it's just hearsay?
Well, it is life-changing. There's no doubt about that. I went into that forest that night not believing in such stuff as UFOs and all that kind of thing. But I left there with a total different viewpoint. Yeah, it's something that I had to live with so far 38 years. It's unique. I don't try to judge anybody on their encounters or whatever. I think that's it's a personal thing. Just like with Rendlesham, quite honestly, I don't really care if anybody believes it or not. It doesn't bother me because I was on the ground. I was there. I know what happened. So I don't think I let the public bother me like that, the naysayers or people trying to debunk it. Hey, they're doing a really bad job of debunking it. It's 38 years. Come on.
Yeah. Patty, thank you so much for that question. Out of Seattle, nice lady. And boy, she's into it too. And she did. She nailed you. She got you. Yep. She said she was going to.
Yeah, I went, and you know what? I seen those videos, and I'm like, she says, "Well, what do you think?" I don't know. This is it's unidentified. It's a UAP. I don't know what to say.
I bet you see those a lot.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to watch a actual video that was taken in someone's backyard, and it's not the first time it's happened. I had it happen with a lady that lives in Northwest Indiana too. She showed me one, and I even sent it out to my friends that were out at JPL. It works out at JPL in California, and also at Lucas Films.
Lucas Films.
No, nice. And they come back and they're saying they don't know what it is. So those things there. Yeah. Of all the reports, 99% are explainable, whether it's natural phenomena, whether it's aircraft or drones or something like that. But then there's that 1% factor, and the 1% factor is huge. I mean, of all the reports a year, that's like 5,000, that's a lot of unknowns. So,
Have you ever hung out and talked with Travis Walton?
Travis and I have talked back and forth, on the internet and that for 20 years, I guess, whether it's advice or whatever it is. I know one thing I'd like to do is probably get with him and just sit down and have a long talk. That would be, I think, a productive talk.
Oh, my gosh. I want Blue Rock Talk to be right there with you. Man, that would be awesome. I couldn't imagine. Have a nice steak dinner, little bottle of wine, and talk. Mm-hmm. That would be fabulous.
There you go.
That would be fabulous. All right. Wild card line number three, Charles out of Elgin, Texas. Charles, is that right? Is it Elgin? Elgin?
Yeah, Elgin, Texas. That's how we pronounce it down here. Felt like the Elgin Marvels over there or Elgin, Illinois, or one of those places.
Ah, well, welcome Elgin to Marvel. Coast.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, James, or Jim, sorry.
Yeah.
I want to ask him if at any point NATO intelligence had an interest or showed an interest. They may have had an interest and not shown it in the Rendlesham incident. But also, what do you think that any technology that might be discovered, say at Giza or somewhere else, will be sequestered, or do you think you might be able to get some knowledge of it out to the public?
Well, the plan is to go and have full disclosure on it, yes. I mean, as far as naval intelligence, the people that I did not know, they were suited during the debriefing at OSI building. And one was American, and the other one had a British accent. So as far as naval intelligence, I can't answer that. I had nothing to indicate that.
Yeah.
All good, Charles. Thank you.
Did I answer that question? I'm not sure. Did I answer your question?
It was about whether NATO intelligence, you know, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, whether their intelligence people were interested in this.
NATO? Oh, no. We kept them in the dark. We treated them like mushrooms. Yeah. No. They, even though we had two U.S. Air, those were U.S. Air Force bases. I mean, we had a lease in that from the World War II there for like 100 years or something like that. What went on in that base, it was purely in the, even though we were a NATO base, it was U.S. Air Force mission. You know, we did support NATO, obviously, but... there's just stuff that's U.S. secret, U.S. top secret that just is not given out to foreign nationals. You know?
Well, that was a good question, and thank you, Charles, to know that. You know, you would think you wonder why none of this information gets out. It's always, you know, shut up along the way. So,
Yeah, you know, and then the MOD, you know, they weren't the sharpest knife in the drawer either. I mean, they didn't come out and investigate until 2 weeks later. I mean, and let's face it. I mean, the MOD with the RAF, they let their airspace get violated at least four times on, you know, between the two nights. And they did nothing.
Jim Peniston with us talking about the Rendlesham Enigma. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM.